another day, another dollar makes you wonder where your money went. You can scream and you can
holler. Hi, this is Jack Spirko. Welcome to another edition of the Survival Podcast. One man's view of the changing world and changing economic times and what we can do to live a better life during them, whether times get tough or even if they don't. Dictated as always on a 50-mile commute between Arlington and Frisco, Texas. Today we're going to go into a topic that I've had a lot of interest in, which is a 72-hour emergency kit. Before we do, though, on that note, I've had a lot of great feedback at the blog at thesurvivalpodcast.com. And the biggest piece of advice I've had from my listeners, and I'm going to try to follow it, is to do less on the current economic situation and the economy and politics, and more on actual preparedness, what you can actually do. Everybody seems to think I'm doing about a half and half split right now, which is probably about right. That's probably what I'm doing, about 50-50. I would suggest that I maybe move that to one-third versus two-thirds, with two-thirds on preparedness. I'm going to do that, but today I do have to talk about a couple things going on in the economy before I get into the 72-hour kit. And let me just say, if you don't have an interest in things like that, you know, that's the beautiful thing about podcasts over radio. If you don't want to hear about the economy or these other things, fast forward through to the part where I start talking about what you do want to hear. You won't hurt my feelings none, and I want to serve everybody, so I do need to cover a couple of things that I heard today on the morning news from the talking idiots. The first was that over the weekend, two more banks failed. That's right, not one, but two banks failed. The first bank was a First National Bank of Nevada, and the second bank was a First Heritage Bank of Newport Beach, California. Both of those banks have completely fallen on their back. Fortunately for the people that have money in them, I think it's Mutual of Omaha stepped in and bought them immediately. They're going to be reopened today. No worries for anybody there, at least in the short term. But when we look and we have another couple banks failing, you got to start looking around and going, how many times can some other company or the federal government step in and pick up the pieces? This is not, you know, one bank now. This is multiple banks, and it's some other banks that are being propped up that haven't failed, but they're being propped up by either the government or by another entity. So we really need to consider that in our planning. The other thing is, if you remember, I did a whole podcast on alternative sources of energy, and I said that the more we did to conserve fuel, the more we did to spend less money on gas, the more ways we came up with to make the electric car a reality, etc., the more we would take away from the federal gas taxes, and that sooner or later they would have to find another way to tax us. I said that a week ago. This morning I heard the following. Gas taxes this year are down by about $14 billion projected by the end of the year. In other words, the federal government's going to collect $14 billion less in gas taxes this year. Now realize that our gas tax is part of the price. So we're paying a percentage of the price of gas. So you would think, with gas being at an all-time high, by using less gas, we would still pay more because we're paying a higher amount because we're paying a percentage. This is why high taxes and high prices don't work, folks, right here. We've cut our consumption and fuel in this country, projected this year by year end, of about 40 billion miles of driving. 40 billion miles less driving. So this isn't electric cars. This isn't hybrids. This is just the American consumer going, it's $4. I can't go everywhere I used to. 14 billion shortfall. So when I tell you that sooner or later they're going to come after another way to tax us on the highways, folks, I'm not just making this up or pulling it out of thin air. A $14 billion shortfall is huge, and that's just the tip of the iceberg. It's going to get worse. So I said I'd keep this brief. That's it. We're going to go into the 72-hour emergency kit now and my thoughts on them, what should be in them, and what their actual purpose is. And I think that's the first thing that we really need to do, and I think some people maybe are not completely aware of what the purpose of the original 72-hour kit or bug-out bag, as they're often called online, is. These are not really meant to be something that's designed for you to, you know, make it 72 hours in your home. My belief is that most Americans, as ill-prepared as they are, if they had to stay home for 72 hours, other than maybe having to deal with the lights out because they're too stupid to have a flashlight or two around, and having some of their food spoil. Surviving 72 hours in your house, short of having it blown to the ground by a storm or flooded to the roof by a flood, most Americans could do that right now, no problem. Even folks that are sitting around living on welfare, not working, probably have enough food in their homes to survive for 3 days. When it comes to preparing the home, I believe in preparing much longer times. That's why my first goal that I gave you when I did one of my very first podcasts here was get your home ready for a week, then get it ready for two, then get it ready for a month, right? Because you can keep a lot more stuff at home than you can in a bag, obviously. And you have to carry this bag. See, the purpose of a bug-out bag is, again, in not to, to just kind of hunker in place. It may serve that purpose because you ended up in a situation where it had to, i.e. you could end up, you know, stuck somewhere with your vehicle where you can't leave. It's just impossible, and you kind of use your vehicle as a shelter. In that case, it's kind of to get you through those 3 days. In most instances, what it's really designed to do is get you from a point of danger to a point of safety and help you get from point A to point B. In other words, you're on your way home, but terrorists drop a nuke, shutting down the highway system. You drive your car as far as you can, and you get to a point where you can't drive anymore, and now you have to get out and walk to home. All right? That would be one scenario. Another scenario would be there's massive flooding, and you can't just drive home. You've got to go around. You know, there could be multiple scenarios. Your vehicle is destroyed in some kind of a disaster, and there's no one to help you get home, so you have to take to it on foot. And 3 days, for most people, even if you work rather far away, like I work 50 miles away from home. 50 miles, you know, I could cover it in 3 days if I had to. And I would if I had to. And I'm going to give you some tips as we start talking about some of the things that people don't keep in their 72-hour kit that would actually make my walk home a heck of a lot less than 50 miles, because roads don't go straight between here and there. There are some shortcuts that I can take along the way. So anyway, I just wanted to kind of bring that out. That's really the purpose of the 72-hour kit. It's to get you from one place to another, to your point of safety. If you're bugging out to a remote location, to a relative's house, to wherever, it's designed to get you there, either on the road or on foot. All right. My next piece of advice is think lightweight and durable. All right? Think about the stuff that's going to last and work really well. Recently, for instance, I picked up a nice little LED flashlight for a few bucks at Academy, little crank on it, and I guess the thing still works, but, you know, it's not really suited for a 72-hour kit because about the fifth time I cranked, the little knob on the end of the crank broke off. So don't just go cheap with your gear. Realize you may have your life depending on this stuff. So lightweight and durable is really the most important advice that I can give you about all this equipment, because again, you may have to carry it. And then, you know, we're going to kind of go into a list of the things that I think belong in your 72-hour kit. If I leave something out, you know what? This is a great collaborative effort here. So come by the blog at thesurvivalpodcast.com, go into the comments section, and leave a comment. Say, you know, I also would include these things. And realize another thing here. I'm actually doing this out of my head. So I'm going to go through kind of the order that I put things in the classification, tell you about the things that I think belong in there, and then at the end I'm going to tell you some things that I usually don't hear that go into a survival 72-hour emergency kit that I think belong in there or at least deserve consideration. So I think the first thing that everybody thinks about in your 72-hour kit, and there's a good reason for it, because your main means of survival is food and water, right? And food, without food and water, you're really kind of in it deep. Especially, you know, you can go 3 days without food, but it's really not going to be very comfortable. And if you're trying to make it 30 or 40 miles on foot, it's going to be a lot harder than if you have some good energy nutrients with you. The first thing that I think makes great sense for food, things like granola bars or energy bars. They're compact, they store well, generally they taste pretty good, and they'll help you get from here to there with a lot of ease. And they're generally something that, you know, you don't mind eating, and that allows you to do things like, you know, occasionally just break one out and replace it and keep rotating your stuff, because you don't want to leave this stuff get stale or stagnant in your kit. So I try to use foodstuffs that I don't mind eating. Another thing that makes great sense is things like trail mixes and nuts. I think they make a lot of sense. Crackers store almost indefinitely. I remember reading a story about somebody finding some saltine crackers that were like 20 years old and they were still crisp. I don't know if I would have eaten them, but it's a pretty good testament to the way that things can be made to last. It also makes a lot of sense to maybe have a little bit of canned meat. maybe some Vienna sausages or something like that. I really recommend that if you're going to have any kind of canned meat, sardines, what have you, you usually kind of have little pull tab tops so you don't have to use a can opener. I still think you should have a can opener in your kit, but, you know, you may be in less than ideal situation, so having any type of meat or anything that's in a can, for that matter, that can be opened without a can opener is probably a good idea. I also tend to carry some dried soups with me. I think that soups are very nourishing and very filling. I've had people point out that on the water issue that you need water to make your soups, so you're kind of giving up some of your water. Well, my return point would be put soup in and heat it up and make some water or some soup out of the water, and I eat the soup and drink the broth, the water still goes in me. Now, there is some salt in the soup, and that takes away from some of the water, but I just find it to be a really nice little comfort food that makes you feel fairly satisfied, so it's something that I really like to keep in my kit. Dried rice packets as well. Those two require heat, so you really need to think about how you're going to heat them. We'll get into that in a bit, but just understand that, you know, you're not going to have a microwave when you're humping down the side of the highway to get to your safe location. But those are some really common things. I think the big thing with food is, I'm not going to tell you what food to keep in your house, right, to eat every day. Food's highly personal. People have individual tastes and preferences. So I would say the same thing about your 72-hour kit. Think about what's small, lightweight, easy preparation or no preparation that you actually like that you'll actually eat. I've heard people say you should refresh your kit every 6 months. I think every 90 days. And a lot of it could just be, you know, yank a couple granola bars out, put a couple new ones in, and eat those other ones. This will get you accustomed to the food that you carry. It'll let you try it before you actually need to depend on it. You'll be able to make sure you carry things that you really like. And that, I think, will go a long way toward fine-tuning what you actually carry. And should you end up in a situation where you need it, you'll have what you really need and what you really want. Because you may not be in a major, miserable situation. You may be holed up somewhere, indeed, a shelter or something you may have to go to for a couple days. And having things you like, especially things that kids like, folks, makes things a lot easier to get by with. The last thing I say for the food and water thing is the water itself. The belief is you should have at least 1 gallon per person per day. Now, a lot of people tell you you need more. A lot of people will tell you a gallon's not practical. Let's say for a family of four, okay? Family of four, and two of them are children that can't carry their own. Now I've got to carry 4 gallons of water. A gallon of water weighs a little over 8 pounds, call it, it's 32 pounds just in water. It may be difficult to maneuver with that. Kind of a solution to that is to carry as much as you can in a practical situation, and once you have that, you know, number figured out, carry extra in your vehicles, because I think the biggest place that we may end up needing this stuff is in our vehicles. At home, obviously you can have greater reserves of water, and if you don't have to leave, the need for carrying it is mitigated. But my guess, my point is, carry as much water as you can while still being practical, and understand that it may be something that you need to prepare to be able to procure on the road. So carrying things like water purification tablets is another great idea. Before I go any further, I want to talk about the bag itself that I carry my gear in. I believe that there is no substitute for some sort of a backpack or a bag that you can place on your back when it comes to having a bug-out bag. You don't know the situation that you'll be in, and it's much easier to carry a backpack on your back than a duffel bag on your shoulder. And never underestimate the value of having two free hands while you're moving or while you're having to take care of things and still keep your gear secure. Personally, I keep a pack frame. Pack, which allows me to attach additional equipment to the outside of it. There's a downside to that. It doesn't fit as well in a trunk or behind the seat of a truck as, let's say, a bag without a frame, because it doesn't collapse on itself. But it's much more comfortable to pack, and it has a lot more utility, so that's a decision you have to make for yourself. Just know that personally, I feel that if you're going to be depending on equipment that you may have to carry with you on foot, being able to put it on your back is a huge advantage. Also, you know, thinking about your kids, if you have kiddos that are old enough to walk, you know, you can put together whatever size pack they can carry for themselves and let them carry some of their own gear. That'll take some of the stress off you and make them part of the team, which in a stressful situation, you might have to almost make a game out of something that's scary to help get kids through it, and having their own pack may help them do that a great deal. So let's move on. My next category of things that I think belong in a 72-hour kit are clothing and shelter items. And you really can't underestimate the value of having, let's say, a full change of clothes. Most of the kits that I see recommended online would say have a full set of clothes, both short and long sleeve shirts, short and long sleeve pants maybe, and make sure you have, you know, a pair of socks. I'll tell you, have a full change of clothes and have at least two pairs of socks. That's something I learned from the military. Keep your feet dry when you're on the move. It can save you untold amounts of misery. And if you do ever end up on foot, every once in a while, even if you're really driven to get where you're going, stop for at least a few minutes, take your shoes or boots off, and air out your feet and change your socks often. It'll save you from complete and utter misery with your feet. Just trust me on that. I could do a whole show on taking care of your feet, which nobody would probably want to listen to, but it is that important. I also think that you really should be carrying some type of rain gear, even if it's just a small poncho that folds up, one of the cheap and expensive ones. Being able to stay even a little bit dry is important. It actually can sometimes make the difference between, you know, living and dying if you're in a situation where you're going to end up really cold if you get wet. There are some pretty inexpensive rain suits that are like a jacket and pants. I think they're better than a poncho. The problem with a poncho is it's like a roof on a house. It streams all the water that hits your body to one location. That usually ends up hitting you right below your knee, making your bottom of your pant legs and your feet soaking wet. And I've just said you really want to keep your feet dry. So I think those types of equipment tend to work a little bit better. You should also have a blanket. You may not have room for a full-size blanket. A couple of those little space blankets will save space, and they do tend to keep you very, very warm. They're only a couple bucks. If you can carry an extra blanket or something like that, and again, once you put this together, you've got to have to pick it up and think, if I had to move 10 miles a day with this on my back, could I do it? And you have to think about that. You might have to sacrifice some things for space and weight. But a blanket makes a lot of sense. I also think that it makes a lot of sense maybe instead of a blanket to carry just a common bed sheet. It'll help insulate, keep you warm, give you something comfortable to lay on, and they take up a lot less space than, let's say, your traditional wool or quilt blanket, and it's a little bit more comfortable, let's say, than the space blanket. They can also be used in combination with the space blanket. Space blankets aren't very comfortable, so you put the sheet over and you put the space blanket over that for more insulation if you're somewhere cold. I also think it makes real good sense to carry a small tarp. They can be used to improvise a shelter. They can be used to keep your equipment dry. You may, if you're in a really wet situation, you may even take your tarp out, completely wrap it around your pack, and keep all of your equipment dry, because even some of the really good waterproof packs will tend to leak if they're rained on enough. Another thing that I think makes a lot of sense in this category is what I call a hammock net. And what I mean by a hammock net is there's these nets you can buy from military surplus stores. They're issued to our soldiers. They're about a 6 foot by 4 foot net. They're not really designed to capture or carry or do anything. It's kind of a six foot by 4 foot net. And the way that you use them for a hammock is simply tie a knot in each end. Then tie some paracord around that knot that'll hold and hang them up in a tree. They can also be used as a net for capturing animals. It can be used for a variety of things. But if you're in a really hot situation, being able to hang a hammock and sleep there will keep you comfortable, cool, and maybe more importantly, off the ground. So it's one of the items that I really recommend for survival kits. It's also extremely lightweight, takes up no space at all, and has multiple uses. And that's what I want you to think about as you're putting your own kits together. How many different ways can I use this item? Every time you put an item in there that you can use more than one way, you reduce the number of total items that you have to carry, and therefore you reduce your weight. Kind of moving on. And again, I'm working from memory, so I left some out, folks, or some just an item that maybe you carry that I don't. Go ahead to thesurvivalpodcast.com. Include, you know, tell me what you include in your item. Give me some other ideas. Give everybody else some other ideas of what you keep. But moving on to the next category, for me, is fuel and light. I put those two together because they're kind of the same thing to me. The first thing, obviously, I think you need are flashlights. And I really believe you should be carrying either wind-up or the shaking-type flashlights. Some of them even use batteries or rechargeable. And if you get a lot more light, tend to, out of a battery one. But even with extra batteries, first of all, extra batteries, extra weight. Especially if you're carrying like D-cells. You know, 8 D-cell batteries weighs quite a lot. Takes up a reasonable amount of space when you're talking about carrying everything in one pack. So you can carry less extra batteries if you use these crank and wind up ones. Like I said, buy good solid equipment like this, and LED light flashlights have a lot of brightness for a very little amount of charging time. So that's what I really recommend for your lighting needs, is the wind up lights. I also recommend you carry some flares, and I'm not talking about these big old road flares. They belong more in like the kit that stays with your vehicle, to me, than your, you know, bug out bag that's designed for complete total mobility. I'm talking about these small signal flares that can be acquired from just about any military surplus or readiness store. They allow you to signal for help. They also, in a situation where you're having a hard time starting a fire, can serve as a fire starting aid. So I think they're a very valuable thing to have with you. I also think you should carry some candles with you. Even if you're just carrying, let's say, the little key lights. I just recently bought, because we have these little things that look pretty all through the house, my wife has, we have to put these, you know, candles in, and tea lights are a lot cheaper way to do that when she wants the house all lit up with them. And I bought like 100 tea lights for like $4.95. It was either at like Hobby Lobby or MJ Designs or someplace like that. So they're inexpensive and work very well. One thing you have to think about with candles, though, and I guess you have to think about it with your food, how hot does it get where you are, and how hot is it in your trunk? So, you know, you might have candles that melt if you're not careful. So not everybody can carry candles in their pack. Obviously, I don't carry candles in my pack, at least in the vehicle, during summertime, because if 105 degrees is what's going to be here today, folks, and my trunk will probably get up to about 200 degrees in there, and I think my candles would all melt. So that's something you have to think about. I also think you should carry lighters, and I really like the torch-like lighters, propane. I actually have one of the little flexible, extendable ones in my pack. I think that's a great way to make sure that you have lighters that will handle the wind and things like that. It still makes a good idea to carry things like waterproof matches and windproof matches with you. Multiple ways to start fire. Fire can be your life, and in some situations, it's just a morale booster. If you end up stuck kind of sloughing through things trying to get someplace, you have this overnight somewhere, having a fire takes the chill off the night. It makes you feel more comfortable, and it's just plain and simply kind of a boost to morale. Moving on from there, we go into a category that I should call utility equipment. And this is all the hard gear, I guess you would think about, the things that you might actually use to, you know, accomplish something, to improvise something, to get on down the road and be able to take care of yourself. First one I think what everybody should have is a knife. I've often been asked what I think of those survival knives that have little hollow handles, that carry a little extra gear for you in a hollow handle. I think they're complete crap. I think they're complete junk. I don't think I would risk my life or have my life depend on one of them. I believe that if you want a good knife, it's a solid piece of steel that all goes all the way back to the end of the handle. And my personal preference for that is a good old-fashioned standard United States Marine Corps K-bar knife. They're very affordable, they're very durable, they're time-tested and battle-proven. You can use them for anything. They're absolutely my favorite all-purpose survival knife. I do carry some other knives, but that is my favorite one, and if I had to pick one, that would be it. Knives are kind of personal, they're like guns. You may have a knife that's your personal favorite, that's fine. I'm just telling you, if you're considering something, you can do a lot worse than a good old USMC K-bar. The other thing that I always carry is a multi-tool. A multi-tool, you know, Leatherman is actually what I have, but there's many variations of them. They're a great little tool. They allow you to do an awful lot with a little bit. That's not something I so much keep in my pack, so much I really keep one of those kind of on me. I do keep an extra one in my pack, though, because I forget things sometimes, don't carry things when I want, you know, when I should. So it's good to have a backup there. I also recommend that you get some type of a small compact shovel, or maybe an e-tool, as we called them in the military, which were the folding shovels. They're available in surplus stores. They do tend to weigh a lot. I've seen some pretty cool just little shovels that, if you use a pack frame, easily strapped on the side of a pack frame, and in like Walmart and things like that. An e-tool is better, but if you need a safe weight, that would be another route to go. I also think you should carry a radio with you. We have one of those really cool little radios we paid about $40 for. It does AM, FM, and several different short band radio waves. It also has a light on it. It uses batteries, but it also has a crank where you can wind it up You crank it for a couple minutes, you get about 20 minutes of power out of it. I cannot overstress the importance of being able to keep in touch with what's going on in an emergency. I know that some of our folks don't really like the media. Sometimes they really tick me off, as I've been known to say on other podcasts. But when you're in an emergency situation, being able to hear what's going on and where danger is very, very important. So I'd say that's a must-have. Pen and paper, something people overlook a lot. Being able to write things down to communicate. A lot of times people think in these situations you might want to hide, but a lot of times in these situations you want to be found. And if you make a decision to leave your vehicle and head home, or head to another safe location, leaving a note for rescue responders that may find your vehicle, which way you've gone, may help them locate you and find you and pull you out of a situation if you've happened to make the wrong decision. It'll also help you with remembering things, writing down landmarks, journaling your thoughts. There's just no reason not to have that, lightweight, easy to carry. I also think you should have some rope, and the rope that makes the most sense to me when you're trying to save space and weight is paracord. It's extremely durable, it's extremely strong, lightweight, very versatile. You can do just about anything with it. So those are kind of the things that I recommend from a utility and equipment standpoint, but I think many other people do well as well. Again, at the end, I'm going to go through some things that I keep and I recommend that I don't hear a lot of people talk about. But in any event, we'll get there to that at the end. The next category is what I call personal supplies and medical equipment. And, you know, the first thing in that, in my mind, is a good solid first aid kit. And I think you can put your own first aid kit together, but a lot of times it makes sense to go ahead and just get one of these ready-made first aid kits. You're not going to be performing field surgery unless you happen to be a doctor, and then you know what to carry better than me. But having things like antiseptic bandages, gauze, things that you can render basic first aid with, very, very important. You just don't know what kind of situation that you're ever going to end up in, where you need to either apply first aid to yourself or to others. Obviously, you need to have toiletries, a roll of toilet paper. You know, I mean, it's not something that people really like to talk about a lot, but it's something that, you know, you need for daily use. And if you remove the little cardboard tube, throw it in a Ziploc bag, it compresses down and uses very little space. So that's another item that you really need to have. And it has other uses, too. It can be used for marking trails. It can be used for starting fires. It's a very useful thing to have. Your basic toiletries, and, you know, for women, you know, there's another thing people don't like to talk about or think about, but feminine hygiene needs. I mean, you don't know where you're going to end up or when you're going to end up there. But all the little things you use, a small toothbrush kit, toothpaste, things like that, the basic things that you use every day in your bathroom, including things like cleaning supplies, having some hand sanitizer, soap, shampoo, things like that. I think that makes an awful lot of sense. The hand sanitizer especially, because you don't need to have water and you don't need to be able to wipe it off. And being able to keep things clean in many disaster environments is extremely important, because a lot of times it's not the disaster that really kills you or makes you ill. It's the infection from things like contaminated water and maybe wounds and things like that. So hand sanitizer is just a definite must-have. I also think that you should have your medications as well. And these could be things like, I think it makes sense to have some basic over-the-counter stuff, Advil, aspirin, maybe antihistamine, decongestants, things like that. Just a little bit of it, 3 days worth, not that much space in your kit, easy to carry. And those things can go a long way if you have sprains, injuries, things to doing some pain relief. And helping you kind of get through. And then if you're on any type of prescription medication, this is where I actually differ with most people. People say it's a 72-hour kit, carry 72 hours worth of your prescription medication. I say your prescription medication takes up very little space, carry 2 weeks worth of that stuff. Because in some cases, your life may depend on it. If you're on high blood pressure medication, or, you know, if you're a diabetic or anything like that, if you're on a prescribed medication that you take as a maintenance medication, especially if your life hinges on it, in your 72-hour kit alone, 2 weeks minimum. And I know for some medications they can't stand the heat, then you need to have a ready supply that you can always get your hands on if you need to depart quickly, that you can then just go ahead and throw in that kit. Very, very important, something I just don't believe can be or should be overlooked on any way, shape, or form. So those are kind of the things that I think you've probably heard a lot of those things before. I just thought it'd be, you know, people have been asking me to do it, so I go ahead and go through kind of my laundry list. But what I want to talk about now are some of the things that I carry that sometimes I don't hear mentioned. One is cash. And $100 a day on 3 days, or $300 in cash, is not unreasonable to have. I know some people may have a hard time coming up with an extra $300 worth of cash to keep around. My advice is that you try to come up with at least that much. And if you're, let's say, a family of four, you might want to carry $500 to $600. It doesn't necessarily have to be in your bag, but it better be somewhere either on your person, and a lot of people might feel a lot more safe with it like that, or somewhere secure that's easily and quickly accessible. If you travel every day long distances like I do in Connecticut somewhere, you need to have it either in your vehicle or on your person somewhere. There's different ways to carry it. One of the great ways to carry it are these money belts that have a zipper that you can put a few bills inside, and they're virtually impossible to be stolen from you, and they're almost impossible to forget if you wear a belt every day. But cash is important. On that note, maybe having an extra credit card, even just one that's you have a credit card for daily use, you have another copy of it in your kit, that's probably a good idea. If it gets stolen, you can always call and cancel a credit card. It's not a difficult thing to do, so I wouldn't worry about keeping one there. You're more likely to have your wallet stolen than your bug out bag stolen out of your vehicle, to keep your vehicle secure. Another thing may be to keep an extra debit card. If you have a bank card, you might want to get an extra copy of that and keep one of those in there, because you don't know when you can be separated from your wallet, let's say, and things like that. You want to keep phone numbers to your bank, so if you do have a wallet stolen, you know, you can call and cancel, but you can still maybe make some way to get a hold of some money, have a bank send you a check or what have you. If the banks fail, I know none of this stuff's going to work, but, you know, a lot of times we have in disasters or situations that are, you know, kind of personal or regional in nature, and there's still a bank out there, so being prepared to access that resource is great. I also think it makes sense to have some phone cards. Again, you don't know where you're going to end up. You could end up in a shelter even if that's not your plan, and there may be phones available, but they may not be just suited to call anybody you want. You may have to use a phone card. So having a few phone cards in your survival kit is a great idea. And I don't hear those mentioned very often. Another thing I don't ever hear mentioned, but I think makes a ton of sense to have, is pick up a prepaid phone. Excuse me, because I was getting another one of these jerks on my rear end here that doesn't think that, you know, anybody else is a problem for the road but him. All right. Anyway, a prepaid phone, one of like a Go phone or something like that. You keep charged up, keep an extra charger for it, keep some time on it, just in case, you know, you lose your phone or your phone becomes damaged, you have a backup method of communication. I think that makes a ton of sense, and it's something I've never really heard anybody say to keep in a survival kit. I also think it makes sense, and I really don't hear this very often, to keep a basic toolkit. Now, you can go out and buy one of these little hard-sided toolkits or something like that, but it's something you can basically put together yourself. I know I like to carry a multi-tool, but a multi-tool, a lot of times, is not the greatest thing in the world. A small ratchet set, okay, an adjustable wrench, a pair of pliers, and one of those screwdrivers that you can kind of flip around that has two sizes of Phillips and two sizes of standard, and maybe a set of wire cutters. Those can be rolled up in a little cloth or something. Very little space, very little weight, and I'm telling you, they can end up preventing you from ending up in a bad situation, just because you can make a moderate repair to a vehicle or something like that. Fix, you know, a loose terminal on a battery, and maybe a small file really makes sense to keep in that kit as well, for corroded ends of battery terminals and things like that. Those, you know, really can be lifesavers in of themselves. It's not something I hear very often. I also think it makes sense to maybe carry something like pepper spray or a stun gun. You notice I haven't said carry a firearm in your survival kit yet. I do believe in carrying a firearm, as you might know from other podcasts, and I'm going to talk maybe about carry guns and the rules and some ideas for them in another podcast. I don't think you should have a gun in your bug-out bag, because if it's stolen, then somebody's easily stolen a firearm and ammunition with it. So carry your firearm and your ammunition the way you always do. But understand that even in a situation where you end up, let's say in a disaster where you're trying to get home, and you're traveling on foot, and FEMA's out there doing whatever they can or what have you, whatever situation we end up in, and remember, those situations we've not even thought of we could end up in, and you're humping along, it could be that you end up in a situation that we had in New Orleans where somebody from the government takes your gun away from you. It can happen. Hopefully it won't, And if you're smart, you won't tell them you have one, but you could even be searched and have a gun taken from you. In that case, now you're kind of defenseless unless you're out there with your Kmart knife, maybe, if they don't take that from you. So one thing that would be really hard to justify taking from a person would be a can of pepper spray. So to me, that's a great personal defense weapon, and it's something that can be used easily. Stun gun, not so much. It's a different device, or a taser, you know, those are okay. But a good can of pepper spray can save you from a bad situation, especially good for maybe people that would have a real problem deploying lethal force. If you're a person that just thinks that, you know, maybe even if I carry a gun, I might not be able to use it mentally. I wouldn't be able to take another person's life with it. And there are people that feel that way. Then at least you still have a method of defense, so I think that's a great one. Duct tape. Be it a roll of duct tape or just some duct tape rolled up around a pencil, duct tape is a great thing to have. There's so many things you can do with it. I see it in a lot of lists. I see it omitted from a lot of lists. It's something I definitely recommend you carry. Aluminum foil. One of the more versatile things that you can, I mean, you can make mirrors with it, you can make reflectors with it, you can use it to make a drinking cup. There's so many things that you can do with aluminum foil. I really recommend that you have some foil. You can just fold up a few square feet of that and make sure you have it. I'm not going to really talk a lot about equipping what I call the vehicle beyond the bag today, but one thing I will throw in is I do think it makes sense to carry some extra gas or diesel depending on your vehicle uses, and my rule of that is it should be enough to at least get you 100 miles down the road. So in my truck I have a 5-gallon gas can, in my car I have a 2.5-gallon diesel fuel can. And those, you know, go a long way toward if you run out of fuel. And if you think about when they evacuated Houston, cars sat on the road and ran out of fuel because the traffic was so slow. Having an extra 5 gallons of fuel, 2.5 gallons of fuel, whatever it is, makes a lot of sense. I just thought I'd throw that in there. Another thing that I don't see a lot of people talk about, but especially if you're carrying a pack frame and you're able to carry weight well, and you're in reasonably good shape, carrying a little dome tent, and they don't weigh very much, a little backpack dome tent. You can pick these things up cheap at Walmart. They may not be something you want to survive with long term, but there's no substitute for having a good shelter for the evening. I also think maybe carrying a cap, just a hat, something you keep the sun off of your head with, makes a lot of sense. If you don't normally wear one or keep one in your vehicle, throwing one in your pack may be a good idea. Even if it gets kind of crunched up, who really cares? You're not trying to make a fashion statement in that situation. I also think it makes sense on the hat note to carry one of those little LED headlamps like fishermen use. These things can be had for under $10 in places like Academy. They are batteryized only, but they last for damn near ever if you keep them off. And again, it's another way to have your both hands free and have a source of light at the same time. I am absolutely pleased with those things beyond belief. I take one fishing whenever I go fishing in the evenings, and I keep one for survival use as well. I also think that this is kind of the big three, so to speak, that I hear nobody talk about keeping in their survival kit. One is maps of the area that you're in, and if you travel somewhere outside of your normal range, get a map. Even if you know every street you think you know right now in your area, get a map, foldable map of the area that you travel every day. Because there may be ways to take shortcuts that you're not completely familiar with, or some places you may think you'd be able to take a shortcut, there may be a river or a lake in the way. Because, like I said, it's a 50-mile drive for me to Frisco, but I could probably walk it about 35 miles. Cutting 15 miles off cuts a day off my trip. And that is a big deal. So having a map may help you in ways you can't even imagine right now. So that's something I definitely recommend that you have. I also recommend that you carry a compass. A compass, unlike a lot of other devices like GPS, is going to fail on you unless, you know, maybe we have a nuclear attack that's so bad that maybe it's not worth living anyway if it's whacked out a compass. But a compass can keep you pointed in the right direction if you take some shortcuts. I also don't think there's anything wrong at all with a GPS. In most instances, a GPS is still going to work. It's going to help you get where you're going, and you can get a decent little GPS now for under $100. And again, it could be a very good device to help you kind of cut some mileage off of a trek on foot. And every mile you can cut off of a trek on foot is a mile. You know, a mile saved is more life left in your body to get where you're going and do what you need to do when you get there. So those are kind of my rundown of a 72-hour emergency kit. I know this is a long podcast, but you know, you can always listen to it in two parts, I guess, or what have you. And that's been something I didn't want to break up into two different podcasts. So hopefully this is more of the preparedness stuff that you guys are looking for. And, you know, what I have planned for further in the week is I want to do one on preparing your vehicle, because you can carry a lot more in your vehicle than you can carry on a backpack. And in many instances, you'll be able to use your vehicle to get wherever it is that you're going. That's obviously much more preferable. And since you can carry more, it's important to think about how we use that space and capacity to carry more equipment. I also want to do one. I'm going to talk about carrying guns and some ideas behind carry guns for protection. I'm a little leery about that because I may tell you like something that I do that's completely legal in Texas, that even if you have a carry permit, may not be legal where you are. So I'm going to have to put a good disclaimer in that one. And maybe we'll do one episode this week, which will only be 20% of the time, about the economy, because there's some things going on out there that I think people need to be aware of. Again, this is Jack Spierko. I hope you enjoyed today's edition of the Survival Podcast. And remember, what we're here to do is help you figure out how to live a better life if times get tough, or even if they don't. You can scream and you can holler, it really doesn't matter, 'cause it all gets spent.